Welcome to Phoenix and Flame, pushing through and transforming even when you feel like a pile of ash.
This podcast is not intended for use as psychotherapy. If you feel you are in crisis, please call 911 or contact your local crisis hotline.
Welcome to Phoenix and Flame. I'm Dana, and this is my podcast on pushing through and transforming even when you feel like a pile of ash. Today, we have a really interesting guest with us, and I'll explain a little bit later that our guest, named Eric McHugh, is sort of a different type of guest than I normally have, and I'm very excited about that. Now, Eric is a 30-year-old entrepreneur whose philosophy emphasizes the importance of simplicity, adaptability, and a clear mind, which has translated well into the world of Web3 entrepreneurship. Eric, who has an IQ of over 140, specializes in leveraging his strategic thinking and adaptability to create innovative and effective solutions to the challenges facing this particular cutting industry. Eric, welcome to Phoenix and Flame.
Hi, Dana, and I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking your time to be here. I want to get back to the comment that I made a few moments ago. You are, what you do in your background is a deviation from the typical guests that I have. A lot of the guests that I have are female, or they are talking more about emotional journeys, traumas, things they've overcome. And what struck me about your story was several things. One, you being an entrepreneur, I really am attracted to that, being an entrepreneur myself, and also kind of wondering what your journey has been like along the way. And also, I don't really have an opportunity much on my podcast to talk about, of course, Web3. And I have to admit this, since we both are 100% transparent and supportive of transparency, I had to stop my 22-year-old son earlier this morning. And I'm like, what do you read this bio? What do you think about this? What is going on here? And so he had to kind of explain to me some of what it was that you're doing. So I want to take a moment so that my listeners can really fully comprehend what it is, the arena that you're in, and where the area that you're entrepreneuring in. Help us understand that.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of Web3, and I have a lot of practice breaking this down simply, because what ShopX is, we're a platform for a Web2 brand to enter the Web3 space in a very simple way. So I'm talking to plenty of like Web2 executives, the pitch is pretty much down. So in terms of Web1 versus Web2 versus Web3, I want you to think of Web1 as read only. So you can go online, you can read stuff online, which is great. In Web2, let's frame it as social media, like Instagram or Facebook or YouTube or even this podcast. So you can read and you can write. So on Instagram, I can write content by creating a post. You can read that content and interact with that content by just like viewing my post, liking, resharing, all that jazz. The only issue with that, or not even an issue, it's just part of the system, is we don't own that content, meaning Instagram is the one who owns that content. They can sell your data for good purposes, nefarious purposes, and they can cancel you or delete your content whenever they choose because it's their content. In Web3, I want you to think of read, write, and own. So not only can we read content, write content, but we own the content. And the vehicle for that is an NFT, which is a non-fungible token, which is pretty much just digital scarcity on the internet. So if I were to create an NFT, you could purchase that NFT, and now there's a direct connection between me and you, and whatever value I want to add to that NFT or whatever value you want to claim, that's totally up to us as the participants in that exchange. And the cool thing is with this, like, once you own the NFT, Dana, it's like, it's your NFT. I can't take it away from you. Instagram can't come in and take it away from you. The government can't come in and take it away from you. It's your NFT to do with what you choose with.
You know, that's one of the things that about technology is it's constantly changing. I mean, we love it and hate it at the same time. It's like we almost can't do without it. But, you know, it's always shifting and changing into something new, which has, you know, pros and cons. So let me ask you this, Eric. You being 30, having an IQ over 140, and being an entrepreneur. So I'm imagining that you probably have had kind of an interesting journey. And I'm imagining that there's a possibility that along the way, you've had some people that didn't believe in you or that were naysayers or thought you should have been doing something else, had their opinions over your life and this kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about what it's been like for you if you look back on this journey to be where you are right now. What has it been like? What have been some of the bumps in the road?
Yeah, so honestly, the journey itself, I think it's been absolutely perfect. I think whatever needed to happen, whether it be positive, whether it be negative, it happened for a reason. Typically in the place I'm now, which I'm perfectly content with. In terms of journey, I mean, honestly, being an entrepreneur, like, because I'm working with two companies right now, but of course we had failed startups, failed business ideas. And in the startup world, you're just failing constantly. Like, for example, every time you fail, you try like 9 things, those 9 things didn't work. Great. Now I know 9 things that don't work. I'm closer to finding the one thing that would work. You find the one thing that does work. It works for a week. The next week it stops working. You're just like, oh, Jesus Christ, why is this not working? You figure out why it's not working. And then you have to pivot. So you have to be adaptable. You have to be open to ideas. You have to have a clear mind. You can't just keep pushing forward. You have to like step back. It's like, okay, maybe this isn't working for a reason. Let's think about why. And I've noticed that. And I've noticed having like clear mind and the ability to step back and just not blindlessly push forward has been very helpful. Because let's say, and I've seen this in corporate life, like before I would start entrepreneurship, I was a consultant for bankruptcy companies going through the bankruptcy, like undergoing the bankruptcy process. And a lot of times, like it was like common, we'd have a problem, our boss would come in, he'd announce a meeting. It's like, okay, we're not leaving this meeting. It's 5 p.m. I know you guys are supposed to go home. We're not leaving until we solve this. And at that point in time, everyone's like, oh, Jesus Christ, we don't even want to do this. You keep pushing. Then you eventually come up with a solution. But because of the state of mind, the solution wasn't optimal. And then you're dumping time and resources into a non-optimized solution. Then you have to retroactively do work. Whereas the correct path, I think in that opinion, was to go home, actually sit on it. And so if you extrapolate that to the entrepreneurship world, in that firm, of course, the firm was doing well. There's tons of resources. Everyone's getting paid like hourly, like good salary. So it's like, okay, we'll get overtime. But in a startup, you have much more limited resources. So if you're spending time on something that's not working, it's not optimal, that's a very big opportunity cost in finding the right solution.
Right. That all makes a lot of sense. And I want to kind of wrap back around to something you said. It kind of reminded me of a quote from Thomas Edison. I've said, I've never failed. I've simply found 10,000 ways that don't work. I noticed you had several quotes on your bio that we'll get to here in a little while. But I'm wondering for you, how were you able to, or maybe you could share with some of my listeners, imagining somebody's listening and they are trying new things and they're going through that failing phase and they're having trouble believing in themselves. They're having trouble keeping going because maybe they have this wonderful idea and maybe they're in this trial and error phase, but maybe they have people in their life that are downplaying their ability or that people that don't believe in them. Maybe they come from a dysfunctional family background, don't really have a lot of support. Do you have any words of wisdom for those listeners of how they could possibly keep going despite failure after failure after failure?
Yeah. So the way I look at it, I think of the universe, whatever you want to call it. I think it just always has my back. So things always tend to work out. And it's important. And obviously it happened to me in the past where it's like, why would you leave a high paying consulting job to not get paid working for like a random tech startup? So like, obviously that's come into my play where it's like, in this situation, the people giving the advice, they have your best interests as art, but they don't know what's best for you. Only you know what's best for you. Only you understand your potential. You understand your gifts and you understand the path that you need to take. And it's really just about keep moving forward. In entrepreneurship and honestly in life, the name of the game is consistently just keep taking small steps forward. And that eventually has a compounding effect. And eventually you'll just break through. Once you have that breakthrough, stuff just kind of starts flowing for you. So it's really just about keep going.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I 100% agree with that because when I started mine, I have a private practice in psychotherapy, but then I also started my podcast, Phoenix and Flame. And then on top of that, I'm building boundaries courses and all kinds of things. And I made a promise that I wouldn't quit, but I have to be perfectly honest with you, Eric, there were times, and we might have very different personalities, I don't know, but there were times, legit, I was screaming. Other times I was crying. One time I was literally in my basement downstairs throwing things against the cinder block wall because I was so angry. I was so mad because of something that was happening. I was confused and I was pissed off and I was angry and I just wanted to leave. I just wanted to bolt. And I just stomped downstairs in our basement. It's not finished. And so there's these cinder block walls. And I just started picking up these pieces of hard wood that I just found that my husband had kept like in a corner of the basement. And I'm just picking them. I'm just wailing. I mean, I just wanted to find whatever made the loudest noise. And I just threw things. And I found out later that my husband and my son were upstairs kind of like their eyes. Eyes are big as saucers. They're like, don't go down in the basement. Yes. Don't go downstairs. Because, you know, you can't do what you're saying. Like, take it one step at a time. Like I said, I made that promise. I promise I won't quit. But along that way, sometimes there's a lot of emotion. Did you experience any of that along your path?
Yeah. And I like what you said about not quitting. And I think what you did and I think what I do is we just set the strong intention of like, this is going to work. And I think people respond to that. And like how we figure out in the middle, we figure it out. But like, we know what's going to be at the edge, just like slowly chugging towards that. I mean, of course, like it's an emotional thing, like especially like in like starting your own thing. Oftentimes it can be just like banging your head against the wall. So a practice I used to be much more like, I didn't used to be this calm. It was more like the meditation that just really just helped with that. But right now, like whenever I experience an emotion, I just kind of transmute it into, it's like, okay, I'm sad, I'm angry. And I try to do something positive with that anger. Like, for example, I started training Muay Thai for that reason, where it's like, Jesus, I'm kind of pissed off. I need something to do. So rather than like throwing cinder blocks against the wall, it's like, all right, I'm going to punch a bag. And then that teaches you to be calm. Because in Muay Thai, let's say you go in, like in a street fight, the first person who gets aggressive usually wins. But if two people know how they're fighting, the first person to get aggressive usually loses.
Oh.
So that kind of forced me to be calm. And it also forced me to be present, which is important. Because I go into training session at the gym, like whatever, it's fine. And I've noticed whenever I started thinking about what's happening in the workday, I would just get hit. And I'm just like, well, I don't exactly like this. So like eventually you just kind of stop and you're just like, okay, calm, present, good to go. But yeah, no, the emotional roller coaster, it comes with the territory. I mean, you're going to be happy, you're going to be sad, you're going to be pissed off, you're going to be scared, you're going to be everything. And it's okay to feel, it's okay to feel those emotions. Like, I don't believe in bottling up. It's just like, I just like to sit back, observe them. It's like, okay, it is what it is, but you just always got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And it reminds me of another quote from, I think it's Martin Luther King Jr. that said, if you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. The only important thing is to keep moving forward.
Yeah, and I forget who says this too, but it's actually, I think it was Hermes Trismegistus, but it's like, once the student is ready, the path approaches. Once you take the first step, the step 2, 3, 4, they start to reveal themselves. So again, the important thing is just not to remain stagnant, just keep moving forward. And like I said, you try a bunch of things, they fail, but that'll eventually lead to the right thing that you wouldn't find if you didn't fail so much.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I love that so much. And I want to point out something you said a few moments ago. You said only you know what's best for you. And I had shared with you before we started recording about how I'm known as the queen of boundaries. And of course, all my listeners are going to know that. They're going to know that. But that is a boundary issue too, because we are in charge of our own thoughts, feelings, and actions. And we have a right to those things, even if our neighbor, whoever that neighbor may be, figurative neighbor, doesn't agree with us. And so were you just always good at standing firm on what was right for you, even though people around you might disagree? Or was that a work in progress for you?
I mean, I've always been good at saying no. Like if I don't feel like doing something, I simply just won't do it. I'm like, no, thank you. And even in work, it's like, I'll say like, I'm off, like I'll take midday off to go on like a phoneless nature walk and I'll let everyone know. It's like, this is part of the day. This is part of the boundary. I can't take this call. I have to go walking. And everyone's like, okay with it. And I would say, it's not even like a right. It's, I think we have a responsibility to keep our own boundaries, because I think us as humans, and it goes back to the authenticity. I think each of us are blessed with individual gifts that are meant to serve the collective. And if the best way for us to serve the collective is to take advantage of our own skills, like I'm the best Eric, you're the best Dana. Like if I try to be you, I can't beat you at being you. You can't beat me at being me. Mm-hmm. So the best way for us to serve the collective is to follow our authenticity, follow our intellectual curiosity, and use those skills to just make the world a better place for everyone. And we can't effectively do that if we don't have effective boundaries. And again, like, cause you found something, I found something, and it's like, you can wake up some days and there's just like 50 emails just asking for stuff. And you're just like, no, I don't have time to take this call. No, no. Like, and if like for me, I'm in the dating process where it's like, someone wants to hang out. Like it's no, I can't, I have to train, I have to work. This is part of the schedule where it's like, I'm like, why can't I hang out? It's like, I just can't. Whereas other people are like, fine, we'll hang out. But like, that's an opportunity cost too. It's like, yeah, boundaries are very important.
Well, yeah. Sure. Well, and I'm hearing them twice in what you just said. I love your explanation, Eric, because on the one hand, I want to point out that, you know, we train people what to expect from us. And so it sounds like that you have trained people at your office to know that whenever you need some time away, when you need to go take a break, when you need to get outside and just breathe some fresh air and take some deep breaths and see the sunshine and all that kind of stuff, then you're going to go. You're going to walk out the door and you're going to go. And you've trained them to expect that. And also I'm noticing, like on your dates, when you're going out on dates, you're kind of training them as well. It's like, okay, I'm going to say no, I'm going to set my personal boundaries. I'm interested, what are your thoughts when you're trying to have dates and have this, you know, in forming interpersonal connections? Have you noticed that some people respond very readily to your no's, like I'm not going to do this, or I need to get home now or whatever. And other people try to push back and disrespect your boundaries?
Yeah, no, disrespect is something I don't tolerate at all. I mean, if someone disrespects me, I think that's something where I'm just like, I honestly wish you the best, but I'm not going to put myself in a disrespectful relationship. That's not good for me. It's not good for you either. And it's not good for the people around either of us if we're just tolerating disrespect. So in terms of like, I just set my boundaries. If someone wants to cross it, again, I wish them the best, but I don't need to be involved in a relationship when someone's crossing my boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And I think
some people do, like, sorry, I didn't mean to not answer your question, but some people, they don't respond well to the boundaries. Mm-hmm. But that I view that as a self, it's a self-filtration system where it's like, again, not everyone's meant to interact with everyone. I think everyone's meant to wish everyone the best, but maybe from a distance. So if you're responding poorly to the boundaries, it's unlikely that we'll have a powerful relationship between the two of us. Where I believe in power versus force, where a forced relationship is one person wins, one party loses. It's unsustainable. So if someone's disrespecting your boundaries, that's what it's eventually going to be. Whereas a powerful relationship, which is like this podcast is a good example of that, where it's like both parties are winning, both parties better each other, and it's sustainable because both parties gain. So like, I don't see the point of being in a relationship that's forceful when you can be in all positive, powerful ones.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I want to point out, Eric, that you are giving a very good example to my listeners of how setting boundaries does not have to be confrontational. I run into people that have this misunderstanding that being in the world, trying to be professional, trying to be, you know, forming interpersonal relationships, whether they be professional, personal, or whatever, that if they want to say no, they automatically think they have to come in hot, that they have to be really obnoxious and confrontational. And listening to you describe how you express your no's and how you wish them the best, but it's just no, I thought was a wonderful demonstration of just how calm we can be when we're just stating our no's and we're setting our boundaries.
And yeah, honestly, and you're right, like setting very rarely pays to be confrontational too. It's like, if you're going to say no, why would you be confrontational? Well, just say simply, no, thank you. And a side bonus of learning to say no is that the other person you ends up trusting more too. It's like, okay, they actually have the guts to stand up for themselves. That means they can stand up for me too. They can stand up for the company. They can stand up, like, and going back to the dating example, because that's just what I'm dealing with right now, where it's like, if I say no to a girl, like if she wants to do something, I want to do something, she's late or whatever, I say no, that shows that I can stand up for myself, which shows I can stand up for her. And so if I were just like a yes man, there's like, okay, who is this weakling? He can't even stand up for himself. What if someone tries to jump me on the street? What's he going to do? Say yes? Is he going to give the mugger my purse, or is he going to stand up for himself? So it creates a stressful situation, I think. And again, and then it encourages them to say no too. So it's like a win-win-win, where it's like, okay, we're both respecting each other's boundaries. Because if you have your own boundaries, the other person's like, well, he has his own boundaries. That means I can have my own boundaries. And if we continue to interact with each other, the relationship is just much more fruitful.
That's fabulous. Absolutely spot on. So I'm wondering, as you're kind of explaining this to my listeners, for you being in the corporate world and being an entrepreneur and this type of thing, have you run into situations where it's been more difficult, or where you've had to be a little more assertive with setting your boundaries so that you can make sure that you have space at work to really excel?
Yeah, no. So in the corporate world, yes, definitely. So I part of the reason I quit the corporate world is because one of my boundaries was crossed. So I was like, okay, why I can't do this. Then I quit and then started doing the entrepreneurship thing. But in the corporate world, especially as a consultant, in terms of clients, so the way consultancy works is you have a firm, you have a bunch of clients, you deal with like 10 to 13 clients on an individual basis. So they just keep calling, they keep texting, they keep asking for stuff. So you just have to set your right hours. Like, no, I can't do this. This isn't part of the purview. I have other stuff I need to do. So you have to learn to say a hard no to your clients, which can be scary too. Because imagine this, you're working, you know, it's going to go to your boss, make it fired. But then if it's really not part of your job description, it's not something you can do, it doesn't benefit the firm, the boss will understand. And if the boss doesn't understand, then that's just another boundary you need to set.
Yeah, absolutely. That it's so important to be able to do that professionally and personally, so that we can really reach the apex of our abilities. I noticed that you went on a Vipassana meditation, a 10-day noble silence Vipassana meditation retreat. That struck my interest there. Why did you do that? And I'm really curious as to what happened mentally and emotionally through your 10 days of silence.
Oh yeah, honestly, that's one of my favorite things to talk about. So in terms of like different breakthroughs, I've had a couple in my life. The first was like Bitcoin, then entrepreneurship, and then spirituality became one. So I started like meditating like casually, then the content started finding me. And eventually for the third time, I heard about this Vipassana meditation retreat. So it's like, okay, I've heard it about enough. I'm just going to sign up and go, which is another boundary I have to set with both companies. Cause I'd be like, okay guys, I'm just simply offline for 10 full days. If you want to reach me, I won't have my phone. So don't let the place burn down. But everyone's like, okay, that's a cool thing. It'll be good for you. Just go. So again, that was like, I just didn't like in that point, it wasn't a boundary. It's like, I just told them, I'm just like, I'm gone for these 10 days. So it wasn't like an ask permission thing. I'm like, this is one of the things I knew was best for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I'm going to do it. I'm doing it. And honestly, everyone's just really supportive too. They're just like, oh, nice. Have fun. We'll see you and get back. So that worked out well. This particular meditation retreat had the benefits I gained from it were honestly infinite. So what a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat is, it's the method that the Buddha used to reach enlightenment. And it's 10 full days of noble silence. So no talking with anyone, obviously no phone, no writing, no looking at anyone, just no communication. Because you want to go inward the whole time. And so you wake up at 4, meditate, breakfast, meditate more, lunch, meditate through the rest of the day, discourse at the end of the course. So the method is, so what you do for the first 3 days is you focus your attention on the area around your nostrils. And eventually you get good at that. So you start hearing different sensations, or you start feeling different sensations in that general area just because you've been doing it for so long. And then from there, you scan every inch of your body back and forth, up and down, over and over again. And what this does is it extracts the traumas that are stored in different parts of your body in the form of different sensations. So think of it like if you're a NASA scientist, you have to send, like, you're a rocket scientist, you have this piece of metal, you need 100% pure. You would run it through magnets, and those magnets would extract the impurities in the metal, and you'd be left with a pure piece of metal. So you do that over and over again. And some traumas, like I was remembering stuff from like when I was like 4 or 5. So you just extract from your whole lifetime. And then you start realizing, okay, this, you realize how those traumas or those habits or those powerful like moments in your life, they help craft your habits. So some, you get, it's a great way to break negative habits. And you end the meditation with, because I'm a big believer in the outer world reflecting your inner world. So I think what you send out, you get back. So I also look at the world in terms of energy, frequency, vibration. So that's why we're connecting, because we're both entrepreneurs. We're on the entrepreneurship frequency. That's why you run into so many people. Whereas like if you're a sad person, that's why sad people are on sad people. Happy people are on happy people. Angry people are on angry people. So the way you close the meditation is you just store all your energy, and it's a little bit esoteric, but I think it literally works. So you just store all your energy in the top of your head, and then you just wish everyone love in the world. And so now that's how I start my morning. Whereas like I wake up at 4:20, I find it funny, and I meditate until I feel unlimited, and then I tackle my day. The scientific reason behind doing it, because it always goes back to science, and I think we're both pragmatic too, is you have more melatonin in your system at that point, right when you wake up. So it's the best time to do it. So I do that, do my meditation, go to the gym. And I've noticed like a tangible effect where it's like I'm walking around the gym. I'm genuinely wishing everyone the best. I'm like, good lift. Good job, everyone. We're here at like 5. We're crushing it. And then since I came back from that, I've noticed more people approach me, getting fist bumps. People start randomly talking to you. And it's because in my subconscious, I'm actually wishing them the best. People can pick up on that. Like if someone's hating on you, you can pick up on that. Or someone's like wishing the best. Like if someone feels love to you, you're just like, oh, I like this guy. I don't know why, but I like this guy. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So what I gained was just like an overall positive mindset. Just really calm. I mean, it was a challenging experience, and now I just wish everyone the best. And if you translate that to business, now everyone wishes me the best. So that makes networking and just closing brands just like super easy too. So it's a win-win.
That's awesome. I want to give you super kudos for being the age that you are and for committing to something like that. I mean, that's pretty significant. I mean, that's a significant pursuit. It's a significant amount of time. And you had to allocate, you know, 10 days toward that and not giving up, not leaving early, not saying, oh, this is uncomfortable. I'm leaving, or I don't really know what's going to happen. I'm a little uncomfortable. I'm anxious. You kept going. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, and honestly, it was challenging. It was uncomfortable the whole time. But if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. I mean, mm-hmm. The real magic happens in the unknown, because everyone knows what happens in the known. That's why it's the known. That's why people like to look at the past. It's like, okay, I did this before. I've been trained to this. If I do this action, people respond to this way. Whereas if you look towards the future, it's like, if I do this, it's going to work well. And that's a key thing in entrepreneurship. We're just like, you really do need a positive attitude, because most of the stuff you are going to try is simply not going to work. We're just like, okay, we still got this. We'll try a bunch of stuff. And then from there, you just kind of optimize.
That is awesome. Eric, I feel like we could talk quite a bit longer, but I think our time is getting close. I wanted to ask you, did you have any last thoughts or points or anything that you've run across in previous podcasts that you thought my listeners might benefit from? And then we'll move to how they can get funneled more to find out more about Eric.
Yeah. So some of the best advice I ever received was, first, just reading. Your diet consists of like whatever food you eat. There's a tangible like connection to like, I eat food A, I feel good the next day. But most people don't think about their thought diet. So part of your diet is the thoughts you consume. So like next time you're on social media, just like think like, how much of this is adding value to my life? How much of it isn't? So just try to surround yourself with like positive content like this podcast, and it'll just help your life exponentially. And the last thing I want to leave with is, I think everyone in the world is a conscious creator, whether they know it or not. So I have two rules I like to follow. It's when I'm building something, just don't harm anyone and don't take anything away from anyone, and you're usually good. So yeah, just be authentic. And just remember, you totally got this. Just keep moving forward one step at a time. You'll eventually crush it. Not that you already aren't.
I love it. Eric, I appreciate that so much. And being a psychotherapist, I really, really am resonating with what you're saying about the thought diet, that you basically, you know, what thoughts you consume, and that's going to really dictate kind of how your life is. And I wanted to take just a moment and kind of reiterate about gratitude. And I've had other podcast guests talking about frequency and the law of attraction and kind of like, I actually had a producer on here one time and he was talking about music and the frequency of music and how he could basically change the behavior of the audience by changing the frequency of the music. And that is the higher our frequency is, the more positive we are, the more grateful that we are, the more content we are, we're functioning on a higher frequency. And like you were saying earlier, we attract people that are also functioning on our same frequency. And I think that's amazing.
Do you mind if I add to that just really quick?
Absolutely. Please do.
Yes. And the frequency thing, you hit the nail on the head. In terms of gratitude, I believe that gratitude has attitude. Think about it. You can't be sad. You can't be angry if you're gratitude. So a nice hack I do is I have a gratitude journal. I wake up every morning. I write 5 things I'm thankful for. Before this podcast, I wrote, I'm thankful for going on this podcast. So now I'm actually grateful for going on this podcast. And it turned out to be a great podcast where it's like, or like, think about what's better than that. Or just like saying, oh, I'm going to the podcast on Saturday. It's like, no, I'm thankful. I get the chance to actually talk with a cool person. We're going to have a good conversation. And to the point of the different frequencies, I use something called binaural beats, which are 2 different frequencies in each headphone. So they automatically set your mind at a certain frequency. Those have been helpful for me. But if you look at the world in terms of frequency, it's like a radio thing. That's why sad attracts sad, like attracts like and all that stuff. But it's actually a scale you can quantify from 1 to 1,000, where the lowest frequency you can feel is shame. So that's at 50. Like anger, hate, all that stuff, like fear, they resonate around 200. And it's interesting. That's when people are most impressionable and most likely to react. So if you look at social media from that lens, that's why those frequencies are pushed so much, because they want to be able to control people. And the higher frequencies, like love, joy, all that stuff, those resonate in the 500. So it's like a radio thing. Like I think my frequency is around the 500. So I attract really just loving and joyful people. Whereas if you're in like 200, you attract those. And to close out the scale, it's 0 to 1,000, just because we like numbers and stuff. Jesus, Krishna, and the Buddha were the 3 humans who I believe were able to reach 1,000. Gandhi, Mother Teresa, they around 700. Cool works of art, because everything is frequency. That's why when you look at like Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, that's like high frequency building versus like a depressing block building in DC. Like there's different frequencies to the buildings. Oh. And literature, art, everything has a different frequency. That's why you look at paintings like, oh, that's beautiful. It's because of the high frequency. Mm. Like the Bible is around 700. That's why like a real piece of art is going to be different than the copy too. That's why you can innately pick up on that. So yeah, like I think everyone has 2 goals. I think everyone has the same inner purpose, and that's to raise our level of the frequency individually. So like, I'm trying to go to 1,000, and me raising my own, it raises those around me, and thus raising those around them, creating a positive effect. And the outer purpose is like the business side, where how you get to that. So that's where ShopX and dating come in. But yeah, no, frequency is the name of the game. If you think about it in terms of frequency and energy, mm-hmm. I think you'd be much better off.
I love this. Eric, I feel like we could just talk on and on about this. Mentioned ShopX, so I want to make sure that all my listeners know how to get back to you. If they want to be like, oh my gosh, Eric is so interesting, and I really want to know what he has to offer. I want to know more about him. I have shopx.co. Is that where they go?
ShopX, so it depends what you're interested in. So you're interested in Web3, it's ShopX, shopx.co. My other company is Dataing, so that's the first ever AI-powered matchmaker. So that's dataing.io. But honestly, my goal and my intention is to be as helpful as possible. So if you can find me on Instagram, you just want to chat about anything. I love meeting people, so just hit me up in the DMs there. It may not be like an immediate response, but I do try to get back to everyone if they're not being dumb. you know it can be. You're just like, Jesus Christ, don't send that.
I know. All right. Eric, this has been fantastic. I really appreciate you taking your time and being willing to sit here with me and give your energy to myself and to my listeners as we created this amazing podcast together today. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. We crushed it.
Listeners, I know you heard something today that you're thinking, oh my gosh, I have a friend, I have a relative, I have a coworker that really needs to hear what Eric McHugh has to say. take this podcast episode and put it on your favorite social media platforms, copy and paste the link in text, copy and paste the link in email, get it out however you want to, where we can spread the family of Phoenix and Flame and get our word out there. I hope you've had a wonderful day, and I hope the rest of your day goes fantastically. I'm Dana on Phoenix and Flame.